President Barack Obama said this week in Paris that the threat from climate change is akin to a terrorist attack from ISIS, and that his successor will have to address this issue. Meanwhile, Republican presidential candidates are criticizing President Obama, saying his priorities are backwards. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It is 8.5 minutes past 7 o'clock on this Thursday, December 3rd. During this edition of On the Campaign Trail, we will discuss how climate change-related issues are being discussed and debated on the campaign trail. We'll talk with a guest environmental policy expert at where the 2016 hopefuls stand on climate change and the various green proposals, and we will welcome your questions and how important you think climate change is in terms of next year's presidential race. How important is it to your vote? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. And a little later in the program, we will also hear a special report on how Wisconsin is reacting to the climate change challenge, and we'll talk with our guest about that as well. Our guest is Barry Rabe, a professor in the University of Michigan's Gerald Ford School of Public Policy and director of the Center for Local, State, and Urban Policy. He's also a visiting scholar at the Wilson Center in Washington, D.C. His areas of interest include public and environmental policy. His recent blog entry is, "Some GOP candidates are warming to climate change." And we always like to note if there's a Wisconsin connection, and Professor Rabe has one. He graduated from Carthage College in Kenosha and was a visiting professor at UW-Madison's La Follette School of Public Affairs. Good morning, and welcome back to Wisconsin Public Radio.
Good morning, Joy. Thanks for inviting me back.
Well, let's talk first a little bit about this climate change conference itself in Paris. Who's there, and what are they trying to do?
Well, there's an annual climate summit called the Conference of Parties. But some of these annual summits are more important than others, and this is one that is at that higher level where there are lots of expectations and proposals to take major new steps that would coordinate actions from a number of nations, not just the United States. So this is going to be an extended period. President Obama is there, but many other heads of state, and the idea is to see if over a couple of weeks it's possible to come out not with a one binding treaty that implies that every nation must do the same thing, but whether a number of individual pledges that have been submitted by both developed and developing nations can be stitched into some kind of an agreement, potentially with significant impacts for the U.S. and for Wisconsin.
President Obama said a successful outcome of the summit would include a legally binding pact to ensure that countries adhere to their carbon reduction commitments. Any idea if that's going to happen?
Tricky language there. There are binding legal agreements, and then there are treaties. I'm not a lawyer, not an international lawyer. But what has begun to emerge is the idea of taking, again, these individual national pledges from China, India, you name it, seeing if there's a way to measure emissions, measure capacity to honor pledges, although it's not clear what the sanctions would be for not meeting reduction targets, these kinds of issues. There's also the tricky issue of treaty language, because under the American Constitution, when the U.S. enters into a formal international treaty agreement, that requires Senate ratification. And there's clearly no chance, given the current tenor of the U.S. Senate, that just about any imaginable climate agreement could be ratified. This has been a historic issue and problem in the U.S. So I think what the President seems to be proposing, and Secretary of State Kerry is talking about, is some kind of an agreement that could be reached with executive action in the U.S. without going to Congress. Mm-hmm. That one is further, even if something does emerge from Paris, that whole question of how Congress might respond to this is front and center and beginning to spill into the presidential campaign.
Yeah. Oh, interesting. But are other countries, maybe most notably China and India, going to agree to reducing carbon emissions?
To be determined. But in both cases, they have formally made pledges in advance of the meeting in Paris. In the case of China, it's coordinated with the U.S., but to try to reach a stabilization in their rapid rate of expanded emissions and expanded coal and oil and gas use, and putting in place some policies to begin to develop them. The real trick here becomes what happens the day or year or decade after any agreement, and is all of this going to be implemented? Is all of this going to be honored? And there, historically, there's been a track record of pretty uneven performance in the U.S., Canada, Mexico, but also around the world. And so a lot of what is going to happen this next couple of weeks will go a long way to give us a sense whether this is just a handshake among a bunch of countries and a wish that things change, or if it's something more firm, and we just don't know the details on that yet.
Yeah. President Obama said on Tuesday that the United States should lead the world in addressing climate change. Would you say we are doing that, and do you agree with him? Is this the United States' a challenge to lead?
This is a different moment for the United States than some of the other major international climate agreements that we've seen, including the Copenhagen meetings in 2009. There, the U.S. was seen as kind of a laggard, late to the table. In this case, largely because of some of the presidential actions, executive actions by President Obama using powers under the Clean Air Act and applying that to carbon emissions for transportation and now the so-called Clean Power Plan in the electricity sector, there is now a formal American pledge for reductions. There are policies and plans in place. How durable those policies are going to be, because this is a term-limited second-term president, because there is a requirement for lots of state cooperation and engagement to make these policies work, and because in January of 2017, there will be a 45th president of the United States, and we don't know who that person is going to be, the durability or viability of these pledges longer term is very uncertain. Again, much as it is, though, in other countries, because you're seeing cases where countries are making pledges to 2025, 2030, and there are going to be major changes in those governments over time.
Well, Obama took some heat for saying that the threats to the U.S. and global security from climate change are akin to an Islamic State group terrorist attack. What do you make of that comparison?
Right. And the question is, do you have to focus on just terrorism or just climate change, or can a nation like the U.S. do both? We've seen rhetoric that kind of tips the scales one way or the other. In the last Democratic debate, Senator Sanders kind of veered toward emphasizing climate change, and there was a lot of criticism. On the Republican side, we're seeing a lot more emphasis on terrorism and a downplaying of climate change. I think that this really becomes a testing ground for the coming national campaign, the 2016 campaign, which, of course, is already well underway. We often think of presidential elections as kind of a mild echo between candidates. And I think in all likelihood, given the differences in the candidates so far, or those most likely to be nominated, this will be an election with posing real choices, possibly on terrorism, but certainly on climate change, where we're seeing very, very different proposals from candidates and reactions to what President Obama is putting on the table here.
Yeah, and we'll go through that as we go along. But some Republican presidential candidates did take the opportunity to criticize President Obama for focusing on climate change and for not, according to them, doing enough about ISIS. In fact, Mike Huckabee called Obama the meteorologist in chief, who thinks engines and sunburns are a greater threat to America than Islamic terrorism. A response?
You know, we're hearing a lot of language like that out of the Republican candidates. Governor Huckabee has always been eager to kind of turn a creative phrase. He's also the one who on terrorism said it's time to, I believe he said this, time to wake up and smell the falafel. That was not well received in many corners of the U.S., particularly Arab American communities such as Metro Detroit. Governor Huckabee has been used his particular language and style on this issue, but really he is not alone among many of the Republican candidates, including some who were in the upper tier. I mean, Governor Huckabee has now fallen pretty deeply into the second or even third tier of candidates. But we're hearing language not quite like that, but with some similarities between all the folks who realistically are going to be the next Republican, who might be the next Republican nominee. So it's further illustrating the kind of divide. And my goodness, we're still very, very early in this campaign, a long way to go still before the first caucus or primary vote. So perhaps expect much more, especially if there is any announcement of a major agreement and a further American commitment in Paris. I think that just only would add to the likelihood that this becomes a, if not the issue of the campaign, clearly not that, but one of the top ones going ahead.
We will check news from NPR and Wisconsin Public Radio, and then we'll continue discussing the climate change issues that are being discussed and debated on the campaign trail. This is the hour each week when we look at, focus in on an issue that is being discussed in the 2016 presidential race or any of the 2016 races, and we welcome your input. How important is climate change to you in your vote? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine. Today on the campaign trail, we are talking about how the presidential candidates are weighing in on climate change. President Obama is at the Climate Change Summit in Paris this week. We are talking about what is hoped to result from that conference and how the presidential candidates are reacting to the issue here at home. And we're welcoming your questions about climate change and your thoughts on this. Do you see climate change as a serious threat? How important is the issue when it comes to your vote? Do you want to see strong policy actions to limit greenhouse gases in an effort to reduce global warming? Or do you think that comes at too high a price to the economy? What are your thoughts? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. We are talking with Barry Rabe, a professor in the University of Michigan's Gerald Ford School of Public Policy. He's also the director of the Center for Local, State, and Urban Policy. His recent blog entry is titled, Some GOP Candidates Are Warming to Climate Change. And we should, Professor Rabe, talk about that. Really? Some GOP candidates are warming to climate change?
Well, truth be known, I wrote that a few weeks ago.
Oh, okay.
And the candidates who were beginning to talk about it have really moved clearly to the margins of the race. That may be very telling. I was focusing particularly in the debate where Governor Pataki from New York, Senator Graham from South Carolina, both of whom have actually records of engagement on the climate issue, but collectively those candidates have never reached more than 1% in the polls and are rapidly disappearing from visibility even if they're still in the race. I think instead among the candidates that are doing reasonably well in the polls, expect to stay in the race for some time. There's some difference of opinion on this issue, but no one is actively supporting certainly what the president has proposed, and in many cases are proposing a major retrenchment or retraction from anything the U.S. is currently considering. So there's a pretty clear divide, and I'm not sure that's necessarily going to go away in the coming weeks. This provides this cleavage amongst the parties and ultimately lets voters make a decision which way they want to go.
You noted that Marco Rubio and Carly Fiorina have been adamant that any policy interventions to reduce greenhouse gas emissions would have dire consequences on the United States economy. How hefty a price would we pay for stricter carbon regulations?
In the case of the proposal from the president to put reductions on emissions over more than 15 years in the electric power sector, you can find numbers and estimates that are really all over the place on that. Given the transitions we are seeing in the electricity sector toward from coal to natural gas, toward renewables, largely because of market factors and technology, although policy plays a role in there somewhat, American emissions have dropped, certainly since 2005, which is this big target year in Paris. The question is sort of how much farther they can go and how individual states, including Wisconsin, might be able to go by essentially 2030 or at least somewhat a bit beyond. So the mix is going to be different in every state. It's going to depend upon the technologies. And literally that story might be very different from one state to the next, depending upon how they decide to respond and develop a longer-term plan for what electricity is going to look like, not just the economic side of it, but the composition, the reliability, all the things we tend to count on when it comes to power. So I don't know that we have a good estimate of that. There's been no serious proposal from any presidential candidate, except Senator Sanders, actually, to impose a specific tax on carbon emissions that would, you know, allow us to answer more directly that question of what the costs would be. This is regulation, much as we have in the vehicle sector, where there's a requirement to gradually increase fuel economy and reduce emissions. That increases the cost every time you buy a new car because you're paying for that technology. But then the counterargument is you're getting more miles to the gallon. And so over time, if you drive a car for 10 years, that evens out. And so that's part of the difficulty of measuring just what that impact is from these candidates.
And we will talk about Bernie Sanders' proposal and the Democratic side in just a moment. But let me, John on Facebook says, this is a real general question. So is it global warming or climate change? I can't keep up with this anymore. Language and words very important to John. Is there a difference?
Well, it's a fair question. And they are related in many respects because a key driver here in the science is elevated temperature. The issue and why we begin to talk more and more about climate change is it's not just like you or I turning up the thermostat in the room by a degree or two every year or so. It is all of the potential changes that can occur. And so when we say climate change, we're really talking about the response to the fact that temperatures are warming and what that means for water bodies, for the rate at which plants grow or decompose, and all the consequences that might relate to that, including shifts in weather, drought, and all of these kinds of things. So it's a wonderful question. I tend to think they're actually interrelated, where it's the warming that is driving the climate change.
And are any of the Republican candidates out and out denying that global warming is taking place?
Yes, although it's not fully precise yet, and we might need to go a little bit deeper into the campaign. But I think there really is a dichotomy of sorts amongst the names that are circulating the most at the top of the polls. So, you know, as you ask this question about outright denial or questioning or skepticism, Ted Cruz has repeatedly said he is a skeptic and extremely doubtful that there's any warming underway of global temperatures, much less human causation. Dr. Ben Carson, and Donald Trump, although their rhetorical styles are clearly different, have said similar things, that they really doubt the science, and even questioning, again, not the human impact, but whether there's any evidence that temperatures are warming. That shifts when you move to the Marco Rubio, Jeb Bush, or Carly Fiorina side of the ledger, and very consistent with the last question that you raised. In those cases, candidates, and Rubio is just very clear and consistent on this. He has one or two sentences he says over and over on this question. He doesn't deny the warming. He doesn't deny the science, but, big emphasis on the word, but, he doesn't want the U.S. to take any actions or unilateral actions to reduce this because he thinks that they're going to be damaging to the economy, and he doesn't think that they're going to have much impact. So those candidates are saying, yeah, there's a problem here, or potentially a problem, but there's nothing we can or should do about it. So that really is the divide, whereas the other candidates on the Republican side who are saying, you know, there's a problem and we really should think about some policy changes or energy shifts, those candidates have largely fallen off our radar screen.
Let's take some calls. We have callers waiting. Justin in Mount Horeb is with us. Hello, Justin.
Hi, Joy, Professor. I guess you just mentioned that Marco Rubio thought it may be damaging to the economy to try to make a unilateral change or any difference. But I think when you consider the impact of U.S. citizen demand and consumption of products produced in China, who is often vilified as the big carbon emissions villain, I suppose, if we were able to bring some of that manufacturing and production home into our country where we actually can take action to control the emissions and the outputs of those processes, then not only would we see an economic boom from the increase in production, but I suppose we would actually greatly reduce the impact that China has on emissions and be able to control the emissions of all of the goods that we produce.
Is that a scenario that could happen, Professor Rabe?
It's a very interesting question, Justin, and indeed, the role in China in this becomes intriguing because of their huge level of emissions and growth of those emissions. Also, given the fact that China is now moving not only to put a cap on emissions, but is proposing a cap-and-trade system very similar to what's been proposed but not implemented in the U.S. So there is a real transition, with the driver in China being perhaps not even so much climate change, but the huge problem in air emissions, conventional air emissions, mercury and the like. So there is that change underway. What happens to manufacturing and the future of manufacturing in a clean or cleaner energy economy is really an intriguing question. And also how much actually energy costs are to all the things that contribute to whether manufacturing is done in the United States or abroad. If you look at labor issues, performance and quality issues, logistics and all of those things, you know, invariably we're going to be talking certainly in this campaign about why manufacturing jobs have tended to disappear from very developed countries, not just the United States. Canada is facing the same issue as well, some of the European countries. It's not clear that, allowing certain energy supplies or sources to work would make a dramatic difference in that, but clearly factor in. Part of the argument that the Obama administration is arguing that if the U.S. can get ahead of the curve and find really cutting-edge technologies to make these transitions, that could facilitate a lot of economic growth and development, possibly in the manufacturing sector. And then, of course, because of the surge in natural gas in many parts of the U.S. due to shale or fracking, there is this question of American manufacturing resurgence related to an energy source that's a fossil fuel, but it's much, much cleaner by every account than coal or oil, which it begins to replace.
Next, let's go to David in Madison. Hi, David.
Hi. I had a question regarding Marco Rubio. I just read an article where they're undertaking massive efforts in Miami to literally raise the roads and build barriers and redirect water flow. And it's just a massive public works project, all because of the disappearance of the coastline. And I'm wondering how Marco Rubio, who is from Florida, can, you know, be such a strong denier of what is so obviously right in front of him.
Yeah. And again, you said that he wasn't so much denying, but saying, let's not do anything, it'll hurt the economy, Professor Rabe.
Well, David, this is really an intriguing question, and I think it can be applied not only to Senator Rubio, but former Florida Governor Jeb Bush. The issues of climate and the very questions that you're raising, rising sea level, certainly in Miami, but also in many cases around a state that is just known for massive, massive coastal development on or along coast, in many cases sea level, is a very, very serious issue. You know, every significant Florida political figure in the last 15 or 20 years has had to begin to think about this and address it. It seems as if part of the Florida response is to focus a little less on trying to reduce emissions and trying to make adjustments in literally where you have zoning permits, where transportation is allowed to go, the so-called adaptation area. And Florida has been in the front of the line asking for funds from the federal government to the extent that they're available for damage control, transition support, and all of these things. This has been true both for former Governor Bush and current Governor Rubio. I think for both of those candidates, there's this interesting moment where that's very unlikely they're ever going to run for office again in Florida. Senator Rubio said he's retiring from the Senate, regardless of what happens. Governor Bush has already served two terms as governor of Florida. This could theoretically be their last race. Florida is going to be important to them, but I think they assume if they get the nomination, they will probably win it. They're now facing a national audience rather than representing Florida, but it's a great issue in question, and we have other candidates for whom where their state is on a particular issue or question is significant. Carly Fiorina earlier sought to be governor of California, and it surfaced in some of her earlier career as well. So it's a really interesting question.
Let's go to Todd in Green Bay next. Hello, Todd.
Good morning. I have a couple of things. One is that I've always wondered when the debates that were supposedly over about global warming actually took place and who was involved, because I know Al Gore refused to debate Christopher Monckton, I believe it was, from Great Britain about this, and he's refused to debate anybody else. And I'm also just wondering about the all of the predictions thus far that have been made about global warming and climate change, et cetera, et cetera. None of them have come true that have been made thus far. It's been anything but false. And the other thing that...
Wait. Because I want to make sure we address this, Todd, none of the predictions regarding climate change or global warming have come true, Professor Rabe?
When you say predictions, are you talking about... The question is if you're talking about average temperatures or varied impacts. This becomes a much longer discussion, but in many of the areas, if you're looking at issues like ice cap, glacier ice, drought conditions, some of the sea level rise considerations, we just talked about Florida, but certainly in other areas, look at the shift in the permafrost zone in Alaska, which is changing. Basically, we're on track or ahead of where we were 15 or 20 years ago. There clearly are debates in terms of what exactly the average global temperature is at a given moment and how you measure that and compare that over time. The latest numbers that I've seen from the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration say that 2015 will, in all likelihood, there's only a few days left, be the hottest year on record since temperatures have been recorded. That'll be replacing 2014. So when we get into sort of predictions, it probably would be useful to know exactly which predictions have not come forward. I'm also not sure how much I would want to make about who Al Gore or is not debating. I don't think he's a leading climate scientist. I'd rather hear from the people who are really in the front lines of the trenches and really examining this on a day-to-day basis.
Could you, Professor Rabe, I think Todd was referring to, it was a report that came out from the climate change scientists that said, the debate is over. We're experiencing this, and that's what the science says. And I think he's denying that science.
Well, I read those reports as saying we're continuing to see signs of this change and this transition. What is unclear is exactly the path that goes forward, how rapid, how significant, how serious this is going to be. And always predicting or anticipating the future, what the weather is going to be like tomorrow, much less a year from now, 10 years or 20 years from now, is really difficult to do. And clearly, this is where some of the uncertainty comes into play. I do think it's pretty hard to argue if one looks empirically at all of these factors that we usually use to measure climate in the United States, but also around the world, that there's not evidence of this.
Yeah. Boy, in just a couple of minutes before our newscast, let's talk a little bit about on the Democratic side. Candidate Bernie Sanders says that the Democratic nominee should go much farther than Obama and tax carbon, invest massively in solar, wind, and geothermal energy, expand public transit, and winterize all homes. What's your assessment of Sanders' goals?
They're not as specific yet as we've seen for certainly Secretary of State Clinton, but he has indeed talked about all those aspects. My understanding of the proposal is it would fully embrace what President Obama is proposing with the Clean Power Plan and the vehicle sector, which the Republican candidates tend to pretty actively oppose, hence this choice coming up in the election. But he has proposed a tax on emissions and pretty aggressive rollout of different technologies, most notably solar. So that would be basically taking what the president's doing and going even farther. Here, Secretary Clinton has moved in a somewhat similar direction, not proposing a tax or a market-based policy, but aggressive pursuit of expanded solar and also substantial investments in infrastructure. We think of that as roads and highways and bridges, appropriately enough, but also grid, storage, and the whole transmission issue, which is popping up all over the country.
We will check news from NPR and Wisconsin Public Radio. And after news, we'll talk about how Wisconsin is reacting to the climate change issue. And we will also talk about how important this issue is going to be in the 2016 presidential race. Is it an important issue to you? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. This is On the Campaign Trail on the Ideas Network. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. We are discussing how climate change-related issues are being discussed and debated on the campaign trail. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. We are talking with Barry Rabe, who is a professor in the University of Michigan's Gerald Ford School of Public Policy. His areas of interest include public and environmental policy. And we are welcoming your thoughts and questions for him at 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. Well, as negotiators ramp up their work at the climate change talks in Paris, some people in Wisconsin are paying attention. They're hoping to shape the future of power generation and reduce the emissions that contribute to global warming and other problems. But as Chuck Quernbach reports, many utilities and conservative politicians favor a go-slow approach.
The climate change discussions in France have given new energy to those who want cleaner energy sources. Last weekend in Milwaukee, about 200 people took part in a rally urging negotiators to take strong action in Paris to reduce carbon dioxide emissions. A little bit of revolution and music were in the air. Sunshine, as in more solar power, is the path for some people. Carl Segrist used to work on renewable energy projects for the state's largest utility, We Energies. Segrist is now a solar consultant and optimistic about reducing use of fossil fuels.
Efficiency always has to come first, and I think all of us know there's a lot of inefficiency in our energy system. And I think you combine that with a lot of new renewables. I'm bullish on energy storage, not maybe in the next 5 or 10 years, but I think 10 years out we'll probably have a lot more storage available. I think the future is going to be bright.
Better storage of energy generated by solar panels or wind turbines is considered vital to a more consistent supply of green power. In the meantime, other advocates favor converting more coal-burning power plants to cleaner-burning natural gas. We Energies recently completed that conversion of the two generating units at its Valley power plant near downtown Milwaukee. As the news media walked through the noisy plant, We Energies Senior Vice President for Power Generation, Tom Metcalf, pointed out the main change, the addition of bright yellow pipes.
The yellow pipe here is bringing the natural gas into the boilers. And what we're looking at here is unit one, and on the other side is unit two.
But Metcalf says switching to natural gas isn't in the cards for every power plant.
You know, I cast your mind back to the polar vortex. We had a very challenging period in getting coal to some of our facilities, and we relied heavily on our gas plants during that time period. But you can't put everything into gas. It's just not a great strategy. You've got to be diverse, got to be mixed.
In fact, Metcalf says We Energies wants Wisconsin to apply for a 2-year delay in implementing the Obama administration's Clean Power Plan. That's the president's key climate change initiative that targets CO2 emissions from old and proposed fossil fuel power plants. But even some people uncertain about climate change say blocking the Clean Power Plan means the U.S. would miss out on other gains from the federal rule.
What do you want? You want some water or some milk?
Mount Pleasant resident Bill Pringle plays kitchen server to two of his 5 children. When the family lived in Caledonia, close to the We Energies coal-fired plant in Oak Creek, Pringle says his loved ones suffered from asthma and other severe breathing problems. He says if the federal government targets carbon dioxide and in the process also reduces power plant emissions of soot, that would be a plus.
I know people that work inside the plant, and I know people that live in the community, and I lived in the community with my family. It's not a clean area. It's not a clean environment.
Pringle says while the talks in France go on, he'll continue to circulate a petition calling for the massive Oak Creek plant to be switched to natural gas. Chuck Quernbach, Wisconsin Public Radio.
This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine. We are talking about climate change issues on the campaign trail with Barry Rabe, a professor in the University of Michigan's Gerald Ford School of Public Policy and the director of the Center for Local, State, and Urban Policy. Just a reaction, Professor Rabe, on what's the likelihood that the talks in Paris and the national conversation about climate change will affect policy here in Wisconsin?
It seems pretty likely that the president will push forward with his clean power plan, which was so crucial to Chuck's segment a moment ago, regardless of what happens in Paris. Although, obviously, the president would have had more impetus to go forward with that if there's some larger agreement and an ability of the administration to then say it's not just the U.S. going its way, own way, but here's what all these other nations are doing. But I think it likely that that plan goes forward in Wisconsin and almost every other state that has some fossil fuel legacy anyway, at least in the coming years, with all kinds of questions then in terms of how the courts respond, and then also what happens through the election cycle and the next president and the next Congress.
Yeah. Do you have any sense whether state politicians may make changes in response to the talks in France or other climate change activism going on?
Well, this is an interesting question because some states are actually in Paris, not just to, have a good time, but states have a pretty significant role in this, and particularly for those states that were early to move for transitions toward away from fossil fuels, particularly moving away from coal. And here we think of California, but a lot of northeastern states, they are actually there and actively encouraging this to kind of build on their efforts. And it's no secret that some states are really seeing the kind of energy transition as a longer-term economic development strategy for their own interests. Solar in California, even places like Arizona playing a role. So states are involved in this in varying ways, and Wisconsin does become an interesting case study here. In the late 1990s and early 2000, Wisconsin was a pretty active and early player in a lot of these discussions, sort of looking for ways, if you were going to take on climate change, to actually try to reduce those emissions, but also foster a substantial bridge to a different kind of technology, perhaps increasing economic development along with it. That has clearly shifted and changed, and now Wisconsin, of course, is bringing suit against the federal government along with a number of other states. But to my knowledge, is also not one of the states that's actually cooperating with or talking to the EPA about how to do that and bridge that transition. By contrast, in my own current state of Michigan, the Attorney General is indeed in court against the federal government, but Michigan authorities are actually talking to other states and talking to the federal government about, gee, what would this look like, and can we basically do what we want to do and still comply? So there's some really interesting questions when you take this from a national perspective and look at state to state and how states decide to respond.
We have a number of comments on Facebook. Anne on Facebook says, climate change and global warming is the most critical issue we are facing. I can't understand the Republican stance, including our Wisconsin legislators, that this is not an issue. It's our future on a sustainable planet. Let's address it. Windy emails, the actions of our governor and legislature on water, air are more than disappointing. Giving Enbridge the right to use eminent domain to take land away for an oil pipeline is harmful to the goal to address climate change. It's harmful to the environment and property. We have other comments, too. How important an issue is this going to be in the election?
Anne's point on this issue is a really intriguing one, in that generally we have thought for some time, looking at surveys and results from elections, that climate change does not usually raise to the top tier of issues that settle an election, whether it's the presidency, U.S. Senate, or governor, except in unusual circumstances. We tend not to assume people are thinking about that as the top issue as opposed to more immediate concerns. And there's a kind of a policy challenge or political challenge to even thinking about climate change, because in effect you're asking people to make some changes and adjustments now or in the near term with the expectation that that will lead to a better future. So this problem comes up in a lot of places. What tax level should we have now so there's a viable Social Security trust fund in 2030 or 2040 or 2050? Those are really difficult things to do, to kind of predict and anticipate the future. And so I think that's going to emerge in some ways in this coming campaign. I think there is some indication, though, given the growing visibility or what, you know, some of us who work in survey research call saliency of an issue, that the climate change issue has risen in part because of political actions, in part because of growing concern that's evident in survey data, polling data on this issue, that the coming election could be, if not a referendum on climate change, more and more people likely to have their vote influenced, if not driven, by what candidates are saying on this issue, especially if they're really at taking very extreme positions.
Well, we have Brandy on Facebook who says, there are so many important issues that I cannot vote on climate change alone. While I agree with the scientific community, it would be rather audacious for me to not consider their education and experience vastly outweighing my own. I have to admit that it's not the top of my list when voting. This is not because I find this issue less important, but because I am convinced society won't do anything about it until it's too late. And sadly, it will be our grandchildren who will suffer instead of us. Well, on that depressing note, would you agree with her or not?
You know, clearly, that underscores that this is a longer term, or what some call an intergenerational kind of a problem. Invariably, we're worried about immediate and current events. Given the horrible violence that took place yesterday in California, I'm speaking to you from Washington, D.C., where security continues to ratchet up after the Paris events. Obviously, the whole question of security is an immediate, important, profound concern. Economy, other kinds of issues. The issue then becomes, when do these longer-term considerations and issues about our future or our children's future, like climate change, but there are other issues that fit into this area, how does that enter into the conversation? In theory, Joy, an election, especially one with a long electoral cycle like ours, is a phenomenal opportunity to have those conversations and discussions. So we can hope for a robust debate and hope things don't just get dredged down into nasty negatives, but that's the challenge before us on this at least immediate election cycle on this very important issue.
Well, thanks for having this conversation with us today on the Campaign Trail. We appreciate your time.
My pleasure. Always good to talk with you.
Barry Rabe, professor in the University of Michigan's Gerald Ford School of Public Policy. Thanks to Bill Martins for producing this program, to Elizabeth Deliquest for on-air production, and to Christy Taylor for on-air direction. Thank you for listening. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network.